You are Locked On Wizards, your daily Washington Wizards podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Did you call back? I called back.
Gilbert, fade away.
Hey, what's up, everyone? Ben Standing here for another edition of the Locked On Wizards podcast. Today, gonna do basically, I guess we'll call this our Wizards season preview. My pal Adam Rubin from TruthAboutIt.net came by. We went long here, so hang in there. You can, of course, listen to this over the course of a couple of days. The Wizards season opener is Wednesday against the Sixers, so you got a couple days to listen to this and, hope you guys will enjoy it. Good conversation with Adam, per usual. Of course, if you miss any of our podcasts, go check them out on iTunes. You've heard me talk about this by now, but did a two-part Eastern Conference preview with Dan Feldman from NBC Sports. Also, lots of interviews, one-on-ones with Wizards players over the last couple of weeks, including Carrick Felix, who looks like, at the moment I'm recording this, will make the roster. The Wizards cut Donald Sloan, but also a really good one this week with Kelly Oubre, plus previous ones, Tim Frazier, Mike Scott, among others. So check that, and Marcin Gortat as well. So check that out on the Locked On Wizards podcast. Quick reminder, of course, you can find lots of different podcasts here on the Locked On Podcast Network. Go check out whatever your favorite team is, NBA or NFL, but look on Wizards, Sixers, kicks off here on Wednesdays. If you want to get a sense of what's going on with Philly, go check out the Locked On 76ers podcast. All right, so let's get into this. Adam Rubin and myself. Adam, of course, at Liddell's Place on Twitter. We get to a lot of topics. Oh, I should say Adam is going to be part of our ESPN Fantasy Basketball League. It's not ESPN Fantasy League. We're doing it on ESPN, I guess. I had a lot of responses. Had to pare down the list. I really appreciate everybody wanting to be a part of it. Sorry to those who, unfortunately, I couldn't get in. We'll figure out something, though, for another type of game down the line for sure, and I will let you know. So that'll be our draft is on Tuesday, one day before the Wizards do their thing. All right, here we go. Myself, Adam Rubin, getting into all things Wizards here on the Locked On Wizards podcast. All right, as promised, here with me to... We're going to call this, I guess, our official Washington Wizards season preview, seeing as how I didn't really have another one planned. Here he is, the man, the myth, the sneaky good hoops player, Mr. Adam Rubin. Mr. Rubin, how are we doing today?
Good. Thanks for having me on again.
Is it, I don't know if you want to give it away. Like, are people more surprised with your jumper? Your first step off the dribble, like what typically surprises them about your game?
Mainly that I'm able to dribble with glasses on. That's probably the main thing.
Do you wear just the straight glasses, or do you go like a Rex Specs kind of thing?
No, straight glasses. So I usually automatically have an advantage because the worst player on the other team will line up against me. So that's a bonus.
You're saying you don't look like a physical specimen, like a Markieff Morris kind of guy, where they're like, "Oh, look out for this guy."
Correct.
All right. Well, fair enough. I would not make that mistake. I know enough. I've seen enough to know otherwise.
Yeah, that would be safe.
All right. So I came up with a bunch of questions here. We're gonna preview the Wizards. I have previously previewed the Eastern Conference with Dan Feldman from NBC Sports. Of course, you can find that on iTunes or anywhere you can find the Locked On Wizards podcast. Lots to get through here, Adam, and we'll also get to the news that the Wizards, we're talking on a Saturday here, so something could change in the next 24 hours, but at the point we're talking, the Wizards have released Donald Sloan, which apparently means Carrick Felix will make the team. So we'll talk more about that and what the roster makeup looks like in a little bit. But let's start positive here, Adam. Well, no negative talk here. Let's start positive. The thing you are most excited about for the 2017-18 season with regards to the Wizards going in. You're the guest. I'll let you go first. What are you most excited about with this team? It can be rational, not, whatever you got. What are you most excited about?
Well, for me, it's John Wall. And I know that sounds like an easy answer, but I mean, last year he was obviously incredible, but he was coming off two knee surgeries in the off season. This year he's been healthy the whole off season. He's been working out. If you've seen him play in the preseason, or even I went down to Richmond to watch him play at the open practice, and he looks, if it's possible, bigger, quicker, and stronger than last year. And so I'm most excited to see if he can take that next step, and he's already taken many over his career, but I think he's poised to jump into that conversation, if not at the Westbrook level nationally, but right below there, and be a top 10 player who's clearly the second best player in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's, you mentioned the health part. I mean, I know we all talk about it to some degree, but you know, just the fact that he was coming off two knee surgeries, wasn't completely right at the beginning of the year. They weren't playing him. Sheldon Mack was starting once or twice because they weren't even using Wall in, like, you know, consecutive games for a minute there to start. And then to turn in the year that he had, really impressive. He made a comment somewhere, I can't remember if it was in a press conference or some interview or wherever, but he made a point at some point to say that this was the first offseason that he really dedicated to getting in shape. We can quibble with the first time part, but the fact that he did, I mean, that was one thing we've talked about here plenty on the podcast, how all summer you watch him on his various Instagram workouts, his comments he's made in other places, how I think he in particular felt a certain amount of responsibility after the way things went in that Celtics series and at other points in the year where he would clearly be getting tired late in games, playing heavy minutes, being asked to do so much that he didn't want to go through that again. And I think that's led to him having a physical transformation, but improving in some of the ways that you pointed out. So certainly a worthy thing there. I'll say this for me, for my favorite thing, I'm excited to watch a team and frankly to cover a team that's truly considered to be an Eastern Conference finalist contender. I mean, I know the Wizards have been good, you know, in three of the last 4 years. You know, they made the conference final, but you know, I don't know if any of those cases where we're going into the year where anybody was thinking, oh, here come the Wizards. I mean, you know, outside of the most like optimistic fans, I don't remember hearing too many national people or even too many of us saying, oh yeah, the Wizards, they can definitely make the Eastern Conference Finals. There were always caveats, whatever it was, Beal's injury, the bench, just the other teams are better, whatever it is. But that's not the case now. Whatever happens this year, we're going into it with the Wizards being in the mix. I mean, I've had multiple national people tell me they think that they're picking the Wizards to finish, you know, in the Eastern Conference Finals, essentially finish second to Cleveland. And that's in and of itself exciting, because when we talk about all these DC sports curse that everybody's, you know, talking about now, especially in light of the Nets, and it's now 13 times a team has had an opportunity to reach the Eastern Conference Final and lost that, or not the, I'm sorry, the reach the semifinals of their sport and they lost that game. For the Wizards, it's only been a one time thing. This was just last year. They haven't really been contributing to that part of the stat, contributing to the drought, but not to the almost there. Caps, Nats, yes, Wizards, no. This year, the expectations are there, and I'm excited to see what will happen. Of course, if they don't get there, the disappointment will be even more dramatic.
Yes. And, yeah, I agree with your assessment. I'd written in the preseason, the predictions that this is the first time I think since if anybody's 40 years or younger who's a fan, this would be the first time in their lifetime that they've ever entered a season with the expectation of a top three team. It was before that always a surprise if they played well, even under Gilbert Arenas when Eddie Jordan was the All-Star game coach that one year. It was a surprise that happened, and the next year they obviously didn't do very well. And when they brought in Flip Saunders and there was some excitement at the time, you know, it was – still coming off of a 19-win season. So there's never been a time where we've started the season with the belief that Washington has a top team in the East. So I agree that that whole mindset coming into the season is exciting.
Absolutely. All right. So we'll see. We'll hope for the best, especially those of us who are going to be at most of these games you know, it's way more fun. I know there's some people out there who think the media likes it when these teams lose. I promise you, it's way more fun, it's way better for us talking to these guys when they're smiling than when they're frowning. I promise you. all right. Now, of course, we have to go to the other end of the spectrum. If we just talked about what are we most excited about, let's get to biggest concern, and you have an article up on truthaboutit.net. I didn't even say that. I used to assume that everybody knows you write for truthaboutit.net, but I shouldn't assume that. Yes, you're one of the key contributors on truthaboutit.net. You pretty much were the only you were like a one-man show this summer. It was like you taking on the world for truthaboutit.net, and you've continued your prolific pace. You've got a piece up today about your biggest concern. I don't want you to necessarily spoil your article. We want people to go look at it, but just like how would you summarize, what's your biggest concern for the Wizards?
Well, it's okay to spoil some of it because it's in the title. The bench, still after last season, there's some concerns about whether Frazier and Meeks, because Scott, who knows how much he'll play, but whether that's enough to put them over the hump from last year. And because they were so bad last year, it's not like the bar is that high. They don't have to become a great bench unit, but they do need to become a competent bench unit. And I still have concerns about there not being any playmakers on that second unit, somebody who at the end of the shot clock can manufacture a basket, because with Frazier, Meeks, Oubre, and Mahinmi, it looks like, getting the center minutes on the second unit, that's four guys right there. None of them can create their own shot. I mean, Meeks is more of a spot-up shooter. Oubre, I take it back, Oubre can create his own shot. It's just not always the best shot that he creates. But so you have four guys out there who, when the shot clock is running down, there's nobody really to give the ball to. And at that power forward position, it may be Markieff when he's healthy. It may be Mike Scott now. Jason Smith will get some minutes, but there's no real playmaker out there. So really my concern is having the same type of issues as last year, where the offense can stall. And I don't think that having Tim Frazier start at point guard, while it's an improvement, that it doesn't solve that particular problem.
Yeah, I was just having this conversation with, I hope I'm not talking out of turn here, but I was just having this conversation over messaging with our boy Todd Dybas, and he had a similar concern about that, you know, you look at this team and there's not just a guy who you could say, okay, go get yours. You know, if you watch the final preseason game against the Knicks, you know, Kelly Oubre was showing some moves off the dribble, had one really nice one. He went baseline right hand, which is the big deal in of itself, but then got up to the rim and then finished with a left. That was pretty slick, but he still has his moments of, delusion maybe on some level, where he's, you know, going one on three or driving into traffic and turning the ball over. So he's hardly a finished product there. But I mean, ultimately you hope that he's the guy, because athletically he's the guy, you know, he's got the tools to get it done, at least if he can get his dribble and his sort of instincts honed a bit more. But you're right, overall, they don't have that guy. I guess I'm just I think those concerns are 100% valid. I'm a little more optimistic that Tim Frazier's ability to run an offense will help minimize some of this. And also, you know, like you mentioned Markieff Morris. I mean, last year it was a lot of times Morris was the one starter on the court for a chunk of the time with the second unit. You know, we saw Wall, Beal stagger, particularly like late in the first quarter with them. I mean, I suspect there'll be something like that. I've been saying that I think Otto Porter's, you know, his ability to be a better ball handler, to get his own, would allow Brooks, a third guy at least with Wall and Beal, to put with the second unit in that capacity. So, you know, I think at the end of the day, literally last year, they literally didn't have a backup two guard. Like in the conventional sense, they didn't have a guy who could literally even dribble. Right? I mean, I don't think that's even like being crazy. At least with Jody Meeks, you have that, plus he can make that three. Whether it's Scott or Smith, you have another guy on the court who can make a three. So if Frazier can beat his guy off the dribble, he'll have options. But yes, in terms of like a go-to scorer that is a concern, is there somebody, you know, we talk about you being the Satoransky guy. Is there somebody deeper on the bench, Satoransky? I mean, there's not too many options, but Satoransky, Carrick Felix, somebody like that, You think over time could be that guy, or is it just not happening with the players on the team?
No, I don't think it's happening with any of the players on the team, especially on the bench. They may stagger and play Beal more with the second unit or Otto, as you said. The issue with Satoransky, yes, I may be the biggest Satoransky backer. The issue with Satoransky is he doesn't fit in on the second unit if you're not playing him point guard. So putting him on the floor with Tim Frazier and Mahinmi at the same time and Oubre, it doesn't help you. Having a non-shooter out there on the wing only makes the matters worse. So I think Satoransky is at his best on the second unit when he's able to have the ball in his hands. I think you saw that against the Knicks last night in other preseason games. That's where he's played well at creating things. But he's not a guy who you'd insert because you need more scoring, you know, on the wing. So they really don't have, to bring a name from the past, like a Jordan Crawford type, not necessarily Jordan Crawford, but just somebody you can throw out there and say, hey, please, just for 5 minutes, shoot all you want. Like a Beasley, someone better than Michael Beasley, but somebody who you can just put out there and say, he's our offense for 5 minutes. That's, I don't see anyone on the roster who could play that role off the bench. That's why they may end up just staggering some of the starters and giving them the green light. But no, I don't see anybody who can play that role.
Yeah, I tried making this point last year, and I think some people didn't understand it. I think it was after Marcus Thornton had already been cut or traded, I guess, that like the Wizards lacked a Marcus Thornton, which isn't to say that Marcus Thornton was any good, but the type of player he is, who in theory, Marcus Thornton, what the one thing he's good at is scoring. Like he's got the mentality, he's got some moves to go get it done. He certainly wasn't good enough, but I'm trying to explain that type of guy, which is sort of a Jordan Crawford, light kind of a guy. So you're right, they don't have that guy as far as we can tell. I will say this, I thought Satoransky, look, his shot was really sweet in that game. I cornered him before the Wizards went out of town after the last home game. And I said, hey, look, last year obviously was a whirlwind for you just coming to the United States, let alone joining the NBA, and you got to learn a lot. So I'm sure there were some struggles. We witnessed some of them, but I mean for himself. I'm like, but what's the one thing now where you feel more comfortable with? And he's like, I really feel much better about my shot. And we hadn't seen it a ton in this preseason, but until last night. And which isn't to say that you're right. I don't think he's all of a sudden a two guard, but if he's making that shot, and Tim Frazier's ability to set him up, I think that's something to consider. But to your larger point, I don't think Satoransky's necessarily shown the ability to beat guys off the dribble yet. And I think in terms of getting his own shot, I wonder if he couldn't get by Jared Jack too much. The Knicks were pressing him at times near half court. So to me, that would be, in terms of him and sort of ties into your point, they just don't have enough guys maybe that can really kind of get by and get their own.
Well, I mean, I'd be happy to turn this into a free Sato podcast. I think that he needs to be more confident in his shot and he needs to shoot more. And then I think he can play that role. But until he starts shooting more, I think that Brooks isn't going to trust him to put him into those situations. I think he trusts him more as a secondary ball handler, but I think Satoransky's best with his minutes when he's playing with the starters, or at least a few of the starters, because that's when his offensive rebounding is crashing the rim, his backdoor cuts. That's when all those little things, the high basketball IQ, come into play, when he's not required to put up a lot of shots. So I think that's where he's best used on this roster. But certainly if he starts becoming more confident in his shot and just putting the ball up more, he could then start to earn Brooks' trust in that second unit role.
Got it. All right, so I guess we'll get to my biggest concern. And, I hate's too strong. I'm not a big fan of saying, injuries, because that's sort of like a duh situation. But I'm going to say injuries. Because while I'm maybe less concerned about the bench than you are, though I think your points are valid, we've talked about this before. Last year, the Wizards were largely injury-free, other than Mahinmi. The starters, except for Beal and Wall at the very beginning of the year, they really had no issues. And, you know, the Wizards last year had on the bench three undrafted free agents. And this, other than using Sheldon McClellan, now Sheldon Mack, other than using him a little bit when Wall and Beal were limited or out, they didn't use those guys at all, and because they didn't have to. And, you know, same thing when Chris McCullough came in as well. And I'm just thinking, like, is that going to be the case this year? Are they going to have, I mean, are we realistically thinking that the Wizards aren't going to have to go deeper into the bench? So it, even if it's like, well, okay, fine, Markieff Morris is out, they start Jason Smith. But, you know, what if other guys are missing time? Or even if some of the bench guys are missing time? You're saying you're going to have concerns now. Well, what does it look like when you have to maybe go a little bit deeper? So, and also, you know, I hope I'm wrong, because it's no fun, you know, as somebody who also covers the NFL, it's no fun talking about injuries or what a team looks like after guys are hurt. But, you know, we've already seen Markieff Morris obviously go down. If he misses a month of the season, he by himself will have almost missed missed as many games as the starting five did a year ago. You know, they've had a couple other things. You know, obviously they have Sheldon Mack. They lose him for the season already. So I guess I'm just a little concerned that the good luck they had last year, just, you know, things, you know, come back to earth, level out, whatever you want to say, and then the bench concerns become even more of a factor.
Yeah, I mean, it's always a scary thought with Washington with injuries. So you don't like to think about it too much.
Right. All right. Well, we can move on from that. But yeah, I think we're ultimately sort of kind of saying the same thing. We'll see with the second unit. I still ultimately believe that the addition of Frazier and Meeks in particular makes a big difference. Again, the bar was set so low with what was going on last year that anything will be better. But you're right. In terms of just straight up generating offense, that will be an interesting thing. Bovada, I don't know, whatever. You guys probably know one of the online sites who puts out over-unders. They're very good about sending these things to the media. They sent out a bunch for every single NBA team, regular season props, and I sort of using some of them directly or kind of converting some of what they did into some questions here. This will be our way of kind of going through some of the players. John Wall, over-under, points plus assists. I just combined them. Points plus assists, Mr. Rubin, 33.5. That could mean maybe he's getting 12 and 22. Maybe it's 25 and 10. Well, I don't know. Whatever it is, what do you think? Over or under for John Wall?
He's going over. He had over 10.5 assists last year. I think he's going to be even better this year. And I think his points, he was about 23 last year. I think the points are going to go up this year based on some more free throw shooting. I think he's going to get to the line more, and I think that'll put him up. So, yeah, I would go over, but it's close. I think the assists will be there, and the scoring, it sort of depends, but I'm going over.
You're going more free throws. He took 6.7 last year. The three previous years, he didn't crack 5. So you're saying you like an increase even above the 6.7 this year. Well, I guess he's got 80% too, so.
Well, like 85. Actually, he probably could shoot a little better, but I think he's going to get down into the rim a little better.
You know what? Hold on. I am a moron. I'm not a total moron. Okay, I was looking at per 36, but actually it's still 6.8, and the previous 3 years the same. He plays enough minutes that his per 36 is basically the same thing. So anyway, okay, go ahead.
Yes, I think because he's a little bigger now, he seems to be a little stronger. I think that's the next step in his offensive evolution, I think, is getting to the line more on some of those drives where he's sort of out of control when he still makes them. But now, you know, getting to the line and getting some more respect from the refs. But anyway, so I go over.
Yeah, I'll go over with you. And in part, you know, he shot 32.7% from three last year. The previous year was 35. You know, if he ticks that up a little bit, that'll help him. He only made 1.13s a year ago. I mean, he still obviously has not proven to be a consistent three-point threat, but, you know, why not? You know, it's just a matter, you know, he works at it, so it's just a matter of, you know, making sure he's in balance and all that. So I'll say just off of that, I'll give him the over. I'm a little concerned for reasons maybe I'll get to in a second, just in terms of the number as to why maybe it wouldn't happen from a scoring standpoint, but overall, I think that's fair. Bottom line is, like you said, I'm looking at another big year for Wall. I know that sort of sounds like a duh statement, but you know, when he's coming off, you know, what was his first time he's named to an All-NBA team, you know, career highs with rebounds, or it was career highs with points and assists. It's, you know, it's notable to say that he's, you know, could be in line for even a bigger, a better year. But like with the way he looks physically, I think that's coming.
Fair enough.
All right, let's get to the other guard. I don't know if you're familiar with him. His name is Bradley Beal. Over under points, according to Bovada, 22. We'll make it 22.5 to make you have to, so you can't land on 22 and cheat. You have to go over or under 22.5 points for Bradley Beal.
That's a blown line. He's going over. He's going over.
Yeah,
I've silenced you. I bet he's.
You know, I'm with you. I mean, I'm expecting, like, for whatever I think Wall has, wherever I think Wall can improve, I mean, I still think Beal's got multiple layers to go. I mean, it is crazy they both last year averaged 23.1 points a game. I mean, that's just crazy that, you know, over the course of an entire season that would happen. But I'm with you. I mean, you know, Beal is somebody who last year was like the first time he really was able to use the dribble to get to the rim. He took 4.4 free throws a game. You know, considering he takes a lot of jumpers, it's not, he's probably never going to be a guy who's getting there a ton, but there's a reason to think he can get there even a little bit more this year, considering, like, you know, his improvement in that. And, you know, we talked about with that second unit, the, you know, who's going to be able to create, you know, there will be opportunities for Beal in particular, I think, to work with that second unit. And when he does, to be more of the just straight up, here's the ball, go do your thing. And that should help as well. So, yeah, I'll go over 22, especially since last year was already 23.1.
Okay.
With John Wall and Bradley Beal are good at transition. I'm lousy here at transitions, apparently, because I'm just like letting this dead end go. All right, Martin.
Well, I didn't want to jump ahead. I didn't know if you were going next to
No. You're a spot up shooter. I'm the one who's dishing, and you know you're not supposed to. You know, this is my job. I'm the floor leader. I'm playing a little bit more like Trey Burke is all at the moment. That's all. All right. Sorry, Trey Burke. Who, by the way, did you see Trey Burke got picked up, was it the Knicks?
Well, I would, yes, although, did you also see that he was just waived by the Knicks?
Oh, no, they picked him up for one day and cut him?
Yes, I believe they waived him today.
What was the point of that?
Just get a look at him. Maybe,
they signed him.
It's possible. They just wanted to get someone familiar with Washington's playbook in order to game plan for the Friday night game.
No, stop. They just played them two days ago. Come on.
I'm joking.
Trey.
Yeah. New York waves Trey Burke 3 days after 3 days.
What? That's crazy.
Right. If only Washington had done the same thing last year.
Zing. By the way, I guess not only did Daniel Oshefu sign with the Celtics, Daniel House signed with Houston.
Yes.
Interesting. Maybe we'll get to those dudes in a minute. All right, Marcin Gortat, according to Bovada, 9.5 points over under for you. He averaged a double-double last year, right? So 9.5 points would be, I guess it would be under from where he was a year ago. Where are you on that?
I have him going under and not being happy about it.
Ooh.
And that is more a function of minutes than anything else having to do with Gortat. I just think that his minutes dropped a lot once Mahimi came back because, you know, Brooks wants to get Mahimi on the court, and that's a lot of minutes he's putting for the traditional center when Gortat and Mahimi are on. And then you got to take the minutes when he wants to go small or play Jason Smith or Markieff. So I just don't think there are enough minutes, as we saw at the end of the season last year. There's not enough minutes for him to sustain that scoring. I don't have his numbers exactly, but I think he was pretty low points per game after Mahimi came back, certainly under the 9.5. So I think it's going to be an unhappy season for Gortat.
I'm trying to see here if I can pull this up here. This is some really awful bad podcasting here, but hold on. Okay, season. So he, in the second half of the year, so post All-Star break, on the year he averaged 31 minutes, but post All-Star break, he averaged 24.5 minutes and 8.4 points along with 8.2 rebounds. And once again, you know, it's not fun when I'm agreeing with you, but yeah, I think you're right on the under because, right, I mean, last year, Mahimi, I mean, the whole point when they brought in Mahimi was that you've got 48 minutes to divide between these two dudes, and literally neither of them can play the power forward. So how do you do that? So even if it's 28-20 with Gortat getting the more minutes, and that's just assuming, like you said, that's just if only they play the center. That's not counting Jason Smith. It's not counting Markieff Morris or just, you know, some random quirky lineup. I mean, Brooks had one the other day, I think, where Mike Scott was playing center. So, yeah, right. Just based on that alone, it's probably going to go under.
But even if you look at Brooks wanting to play small, that'll take some minutes away. But then you look at, you know, they're playing Cleveland on November 3rd. If Kevin Love is starting at center for Cleveland, my guess is, based on the Kendrick Perkins experience a few years ago, Brooks would still start Gortat against Love. But after a couple minutes, he's going to have to come out, and Mahimi is not going to come in. Someone else will play. So I think situations like that are going to get his minutes down as well.
Yeah, I agree. In a general sense, you know, with regards to Marcin Gortat, now this is year four, right? Year four of his 5-year extension, or yes, 5-year contract that he signed with the Wizards. He's 33. He turns 34 in February. The question when he signed the contract, the question was, could you get truly to the last 2 years of that deal without a major fall off? I mean, to this point, I think that's, you know, no matter what you think of Gortat, he averaged a double-double last year, led the league in screen assists, you know, played every single game. You know, I don't think we've seen anything close to a drop-off per se. That said, it's, you know, at some point it happens. Do you think we're going to, at this point now, with, you know, with more miles and all that stuff, is this the year where you start to notice a drop off, not so much necessarily in stats, because like we said, it could be a minutes thing, but in terms of the sort of the crispness, the just the general overall skill set and ability?
I don't think so. I mean, he seems to stay in pretty good shape, and as you said, he plays every single game, and his game is such that some of this is unfortunate, but that a loss of a little bit of explosiveness does not affect him as much, because you already see that on these pick and rolls, even for the last few years. He likes to sort of flip up a layup instead of dunking, and that's some of the frustration of not going strong to the rim. So those are little things which he was already doing. If you're looking at an Amari Stoudemire-type player who uses physical attributes to sort of dominate down low, and then once he gets, you know, some decline, it hurts a lot more. But I think Gortat's game will age well, and you know, I think he's been fine, and he should be fine for the next couple of years.
All right. Otto Porter, according to Bovada, the over-under for points is 13.5. Now, he's improved his game, his stats, basically every year. He averaged 13.4 a year ago. So, based on that, I would say over seems reasonable enough. And, you know, what I mentioned before about Wall, the question I'd have with his number, especially on the scoring side, is, you know, if Otto Porter doesn't continue to improve his scoring, then, you know, it's got to come from somewhere, and maybe that comes a little from Wall, but then he would gain assists and so on. But I'll go over, but my real issue or my real question is, you know, there was a massive split last year with regards to his three-point shooting. He was leading the league, of course, in three-point shooting. I think he was leading, I think maybe he was second at the All-Star break, but he was basically leading it for most of the year. At the All-Star break last year, he was at 46.6%. After the All-Star break, 34.1. I don't know if I've seen enough in preseason to suggest that it's all good. He's, you know, but that's obviously when you talk about all of it, the team success, but also his scoring, you know, if he, is he making those threes or not? Teams adjusted to him last year, and now we have to see if he's got enough game for the adjustment. So I'll go over, but curious where that 3-point percentage lands on him this year.
Yeah, the threes are a bit of a concern just because it was only really a 50-game sample size when he was leading the league. And again, it was 32 games plus some in the playoffs. I think his numbers were also down percentage-wise. So it was a pretty, almost an even clip of him being one of the best versus a, league average. So, you have to pick your – which one is he? Which is the real Otto? But I think he's also improved his mid-range game some, and I guess hopefully his confidence with that extra – $104 million in the bank, at least so far in preseason, he seems to be stepping into shots and willing to shoot, a little more than he was before. I've seen him go to the rim a few times. A couple times he got the rebound and put the ball right back up when he might have passed back out in past years. So I think he might make up for it for being a more integral part of the offense. So even if he's not scoring as much on three-point shots specifically, he'll be a bigger part of the offense and should be able to up his numbers once again.
Yeah, I mentioned this on Twitter watching during the Wizards Knicks game, and I've noticed this just throughout training camp and the preseason. Otto Porter is not the most demonstrative of players. If you rank the NBA players based on ego or just overt cockiness, he might rank bottom five players. I mean, he's just not that kind of guy. But he just looks much more comfortable with himself. Just when I'm watching him, just being around the team, on the side, dealing with us, and then on the court as well. I mean, it seems like it's translating there as well. And by the way, it's amazing. He might be the skinniest guy in the league, and he probably the Wizards' best overall rebounder, like in a pound-for-pound kind of way. He just gets every loose – he just seems to have a knack for getting those caroms, especially the ones, sort of bounce away from the basket. And he's just a constant threat that way. So, whether his 3-point percentage gets back to 46% or not, he just looks like he's feeling better about himself. Maybe just no more pressure of the contract or what have you. But that's why I think it bodes well for a better year once again.
Yeah, I agree.
Fantastic. All right, let's get to another one here on the Locked On Wizards podcast. Ben Standig with Mr. Adam Rubin from truthaboutit.net. You can, of course, find Adam on Twitter at Liddell's Place, as in Liddell Eccles. If there's anybody on this podcast, anybody listening who doesn't know, isn't familiar with Liddell Eccles, you should 100% tweet at Adam, and he will give you a full detailed biography of Liddell Eccles. It's worth it, I promise. It is a highly entertaining guy there. All right, Kelly Oubre, 3-point percentage. Now I'm just making these up. Kelly Oubre 3-point percentage. Last year, his 3-point percentage was not good. He's not been a good 3-point shooter since he's really been in the league. Even though I feel like when I talk to people, they all seem to think he is. Now he's made improvements with his form in the off season, and he's made some shots in preseason, but we'll see. But last year, he shot a dismal 28.7%. I've said all along, if he gets that up to 33, which is, hard, not a huge number, gets that to 33, the world is completely different for him and the Wizards. So, over-under on Kelly Oubre, 32.5% from three. What do you think?
Well, I'll be a contrarian. I'll go under. I'm a contrarian. I'm guessing you'll say over. Only because I think what's going to hold him back is those ill-advised threes that he's going to take. So I think he has been shooting, it seems like, okay in the preseason. He seems to step in with confidence. But on the second unit, if he's a primary scorer, I think we're going to see a few three-pointers that we'd like to have back. And I think those are the ones that are going to drop his average.
I could not agree more. I mean, like we talked before, like if you say who's going to be the breakout performer for that second unit, who's the guy that could become that go-to player, the answer would be Oubre. But in order to get there, if that's ever going to happen, he's going to have to try to be that guy. And the more he tries, especially early on, it means his percentages are going to suffer because he's not there yet. He when he's with the first unit, that lineup where he's playing at the four spot with Otto, that which was that, that one of the top of five main units in the league last year, you know, in those, he'll be given wide open threes. He's the guy the opponents want to take. And in those lineups, if he can, you know, hit 33% or so, 34%, that will be ginormous. But you're right, on that second unit, it probably will drag him down enough because he's going to force opportunities, and that will probably hurt it. So, yes, you are not being a contrarian. I probably will go under, but I think I'll feel slightly better about it, but I don't know. We'll see. We'll see how better I feel about it. But there's always hope. Did you listen to the interview I did with him the other day?
Parts of it.
What are you living
like? I didn't get the whole thing. I was on the metro. There's metro and there's, you know, it goes in and out. It's, you know, sometimes you start the thing and it doesn't, you can't finish it.
I thought it was a good interview. And I mean, you know, he's a confident young man. He's one of those guys you listen to talk and you kind of believe he can do anything he thinks, but we'll see. It's year three. He's still only 21, so there's a lot of room to grow, but you know, he's not, he looks the part, but he hasn't played the part yet, and we'll see what he can get done this year.
Then I will go back and complete the Oubre interview.
You should do that. We also talked about him with Dan Feldman in, I believe that was in the part two of the East preview. We got into some Oubre. He was the guy I talked about in terms of if the Wizards are going to take that big leap record-wise. It kind of, barring injuries, I think it kind of comes down to Oubre making a jump. Who plays more when Markieff Morris returns, Jason Smith or Mike Scott? If the Wizards are going to go with a 10-man rotation, then it's unlikely that both of them are going to get real minutes. And so if we're assuming Gortat and Mahimi are both going to play and there's no other injuries, then one of those guys probably gets banished to that 11th-man spot. Who do you think that is when Morris comes back? Or who do you think?
Well, before I answer, I would like to amend my first answer about what I'm most excited about, and it is Jason Smith shooting three-pointers. I forgot to mention that earlier. So I would like to see Jason Smith get the minutes. However, my concern is the same thing this year is going to happen this year that did last year when Mahimi came back, and Jason Smith is going to be the odd man out because he's viewed as a center or more mobile, five, you know, stretch four, but he's not that good playing alongside Gortat or Mahimi. So if Brooks is going to continue to give minutes to Gortat and Mahimi at center, there's nowhere for Smith to play. He can only play on those rare times when Brooks decides to sit Mahimi against a more mobile guy like a Kelly Olynyk type player. So I feel like Smith, even though I think he's definitely top 10 guy, I put him as probably maybe even top 8 rotation guy who should be on the floor, I think he's going to get squeezed out. And I think it was unfortunate last year, and if it happens again, it will be unfortunate again because I think his jump shooting would be very, very helpful on the second unit to help spread the floor versus playing Mahimi. But so that would be my guess is what would happen. But you know, we'll see. I think it all comes down to whether Mahimi is really locked into 20 minutes a game as the backup center.
I mean, the Mahimi thing, like I know a lot of people talk about, oh, what a bust, what a terrible year. And, you know, obviously the injuries were a disaster. Doesn't really mean he was a bust. He was just hurt and couldn't play. And the second unit's net rating did improve significantly during that stretch where he played last year. Of course, they also had Bogdanovich and Brandon Jennings were added to the team at that point, so we're not going to discount them. But, you know, what Mahimi offers, in theory, defense and rebounding, is something that this team does need. I mean, you know, it shouldn't be discounted what he can provide. But that said, I don't know. I'm not judging too much off the preseason, so don't get me wrong. But I wasn't, like, looking at that going, wow, that guy is killing it. And, you know, I think he's out there as long as his defense and rebounding hold up. But I don't know. I guess I'm just saying if I had any concerns about his playing, watching him in these preseason games didn't make me think to myself, oh, nothing to worry about here. I think ultimately you're right, though. I think Jason Smith is out. Well, I'll come back to that in a second. But anyway, Mahimi, do you have any major concerns about him based off of what you've seen here so far? Or, you know, or just...
Yeah, I'd say they're bordering on major concerns. And it's not so much Mahimi as the... in a vacuum. Mahimi in a vacuum is fine. It's Mahimi in the 18 to 20 minutes or maybe 25 minutes when Gortat isn't on the floor. It's what is the best lineup for Washington? Is it playing a traditional center again for in the second unit? And that depends a lot on what the opposing team is doing. But this team struggles to score on the second unit. Mahimi's offense is very, very bad because he doesn't create any offense off his passes. He's always catching the ball on the perimeter and just passing it back to somebody. He's never making any passes that advance the offense. And as you saw last night, his post-up is very slow, very methodical. It usually does not end in a basket, even though his shooting percentages, I don't know how they're so high, but I guess he gets a lot of shots at the rim. But when it goes into him in the post, he sort of has that Kevin Serafin black hole game, but without the nice soft touch on a jump hook. So my concern is not so much, I don't want to put the blame on Mahimi or that it's him doing something wrong. It's more playing him too many minutes when other combinations would do better on the second unit.
And just sort of to tie it back in with Jason Smith, I mean, like I said, I do think that, like, look, maybe the second unit isn't going to be one that crackles with scoring, right? If they're not getting the fast break going, maybe they're going to struggle in half court. But that's where I think having Mahimi, if he's right, having him there anchoring the middle for defense and rebounding is a big factor. I mean, all you're sort of asking for your second unit on some basic level is hold serve. They don't necessarily have to go out and kill the other team. That's ideal. If your second unit is better than the other team's second unit, good chance you're going to win some games because you figure most teams have pretty good starting lineups one way or the other. But last year, they just couldn't hold serve. The Wizards would be up 10, and immediately, you know, Scott Brooks is calling a timeout because the lead's gone, and he's got to put the starters back. So can they hold serve? I just think with Mahimi's presence, what he does defensively and rebounding, in theory, will allow them to be a little more stable, and I think that's going to be good. As far as the Jason Smith part, just to tie that off, I wonder if Mike Scott is just – if Mike Scott's making threes as well, and he's looked pretty good so far in preseason – does his work on the other end of the court? He's a little more athletic, maybe a little bit better defender, or maybe even more than a little bit better. He's a little better ability, perhaps, to put the ball on the ground. If all that's true, then maybe he's just simply the better fit with the second unit, and then therefore, unfortunately for Jason Smith, he just becomes the odd man out to some degree. Not even because of the Mahimi part per se, but just that Mike Scott is just maybe a better fit.
Well, I think he's a better fit, certainly if there's a traditional center that he's playing with. I mean, that's where I think the Mahimi thing does matter, simply because Scott's a better fit next to Mahimi than Jason Smith is.
Even if you went Mike Scott and Jason Smith, sat Mahimi hypothetically, I just feel like defensively that team is going to have a problem. Like their problem defensively at that point probably worse than their problem offensively in terms of the lack of playmakers.
Yeah, and a lot of this we're doing theoretically. It obviously depends on the matchups, and there are plenty of times where Mahimi will be the best option at backup center. There's plenty of teams that you're playing, whether, you know, Boban comes in, Aaron Baines, I mean, many, many players who will be in that Mahimi will be the best option. So it's more about hoping that Brooks will have the flexibility to go with whoever is the best based on matchups on a game-to-game basis.
All right. Next question here. I originally had this question of which of these three bench guys will have the best chance to crack the rotation. I included Satoransky, but I'm not doing that. We're taking that out. I forget who I'm dealing with here. You're going to pick Satoransky, of course, and you're probably right. So we'll scrap him. So that leaves.
Well, first.
Go ahead.
No, go on.
All right. So if we take out Satoransky and we take out the Jason Smith, Mike Scott part, because they'll play one way or the other. So that leaves Chris McCullough, and likely it leaves Carrick Felix. Now, Sheldon Mack, just to mention this again, from what I'm hearing, it sounds like the Wizards are going to keep him on the roster for now. We talked about in a previous podcast that they would be hit for probably about another $2.5 million in luxury tax, according to Bobby Marks from ESPN had that. So it sounds like for now the Wizards are content to go with the 14 guys plus the two D-leaguers and keep Mac around. So that only leaves Chris McCullough and Carrick Felix as the only other guys who have a chance to crack the rotation. I don't know, you want to go percentage odds or just pick one or whatever. Better chance of those two guys to get some actual playing time this year.
Well, I think neither of them have a chance, but I would put Felix over McCullough simply because you know, McCullough, I just don't think you can trust him defensively. And I think that's one area where Brooks just will sort of have a short hook for that. I mean, he seems lost on defense, and just that alone seems like it wouldn't be – you can't keep him out there. He'd have to be a really good three-point shooter to make up for his defensive, you know, lack of awareness, and he's not that great of a three-point shooter. Felix, I would just say if Sheldon Mack couldn't get any minutes last year, then Felix isn't going to get any this year. They're sort of in a similar position. I thought Mack would have had more – going on with the team in terms of his history with the team, the Mac would have had a much more, you know, bigger chance to get in there. Felix is fine, you know, but I just don't think I'd much rather have the end of the roster go to a veteran, because I still think this team needs more on the second unit. So, I mean, like a Richard Jefferson type player, not necessarily him, but like he's like those type of guys who are out there. I'd rather just throw him out with the second unit and just have someone who at least has, you know, a lot of basketball experience who can settle things down. But no, I don't think either of them would get any minutes. And I think if it came to the point where they needed to get minutes, there would be a 10-day contract signed, you know, by Ernie for someone who's better than both of them.
Right. I'm with you to an extent on the Sheldon Mack part of it with Felix. But, I mean, Mack was a rookie last year. Felix hasn't played a ton in the NBA, but he is 27. He's been around for a minute, at least mentally. And he's a pretty smart guy. I won't ask you if you listened to that interview, but he was pretty interesting talking to him as well, his interest both on and off the court. And I guess what part of me wonders there is, I always think it's important, like similar how we talked about having a guy like that, Jordan Crawford type guy who can just come in and get buckets when your team, especially if your team can't get anything going. Well, I also like having a guy on my bench who's just a high energy dude when your team is sluggish, nothing's happening. Who can get you going there? I kind of think that that Felix could give them that. I mean, he's just been relentless out here on the court. And granted, he's often playing against the other team's backups to the backup, so I'm not going too crazy on that. But I'm not saying he's ever going to get in the rotation. I wouldn't surprise me if there's a moment or two where Scott Brooks says, you know what, I need some fire. You, go play. And especially maybe even with Morris is out, because if Oubre is going to have to play more minutes with the starters, maybe that second unit won't have that, you know, they need another wing slasher type, and maybe that's where Felix can fill in. I don't really have much faith that McCullough's got a shot to do anything. So it's Felix regardless. But I don't know. Maybe I'm a sucker right now. Maybe it's because there hasn't been any interesting storylines in the preseason that I'm all in on the Carrick Felix thing. But
yeah, I know. You've been talking up Carrick Felix behind the scenes. So but he plays with the energy. I agree in that. You have to bring something to the table that someone else doesn't, that, you know, and he is bringing that energy. He's got an incredible vertical leap. And so, yes, I could see in that way, similar to Satoransky, in that I think Brooks looks at them as energy guys who will hustle. So on a night when the first unit doesn't have it and maybe Oubre does something stupid, I could see him saying, screw this, putting in Felix, put in Satoransky, guys he knows are going to run and play hard. So, yeah, I could see that type of them filling that type of role.
All right, let's get to sort of a slightly silly question, but, you know, one I'm taking highly seriously. Which opponent this year, Mr. Rubin, will score the most points in a single game against the Wizards? Now, you've got a lot of chances here. You've got there's a bunch of NBA teams. You got there's 30 teams, right? So there's 29 opponents. And they play these teams multiple times. You don't have to tell me yet, but do you have a specific answer in mind?
I have players, but not more on the a lighthearted note. Not someone specifically that I really believe will definitely do it.
All right. Well, here I'll give you my answer, then you can go however you want. I mean, it is what it is. All right, here we go. I'm trying to think of a scenario in which it's, you know, if we're gonna just throw a dart here, you know. Some scenario where, you know, like the Wizards maybe are a little bit tired. They're playing a team that tends to score a lot of points. You know, is there a position where maybe the Wizards are a little more vulnerable defensively, what have you? So the scenario I came up with is this, and I came up with this in 27 seconds. So here we go. The Wizards go for a 5-game road trip in early December. They started at Utah. That is going to be a tough grind it out game. Utah's a huge pain in the butt. They're all defense, right? You know, and when you're playing a team that's going to grind it out like that, you kind of in turn have to play that way, and that's going to be a slugfest. The very next night, the Wizards go on the road to Portland, where I believe last year the Wizards and Portland played a game where they just, like, you know, both teams were just haymakers offensively, one after the other. And I think that Damian Lillard, I think a Damian Lillard-John Wall matchup is always interesting because these are two point guards. I think Lillard right now in particular is getting left behind a little bit in the whole who are the better point guards in the league. I think this is one of those matchups for him where he can really show off. You factor in that the Wizards are going to be a little bit tired. You know, Wall's going to have, you know, again, back-to-back games. So I'm going Damian Lillard. I'm going to go 40 points. Damian Lillard, December 5th at Portland.
40 points. Okay, you're going very specific. I'd say the ones you have to look for, it would be, and this is going to be, I'll do a scenario like yours where it's a little convoluted, but one, I'd say, we've mentioned him earlier, but I would say Jrue Holiday gets injured, DeMarcus Cousins sits out, and Jordan Crawford lights up the Wizards with Rajon Rondo beating him, and they duplicate the Rod Strickland, Tracy Murray 25th 50-point game.
Wow.
Against Washington.
Okay, look, if that happens, I may have to have Mayor Muriel Bowser drop an Adam Rubin Day proclamation or something.
This is, again, at the end of the season on April 5th, Washington goes to Cleveland. Mm. Now, if players are sitting, if some of the playoff spots are locked up at that time, you might have Isaiah Thomas haven't been back for maybe a month or two. You might have Thomas getting some run, trying to get up to speed against a bunch of bench players on Washington. There could be some taunting involved. There could be a message that Isaiah wants to send going into the end of his contract year. So that's a possibility of if the offense is turned over to Thomas and he's trying to make a statement, you could see him trying to go off in that game, and we don't have much to counter it if we're sitting people at the time.
Gotcha. I'll give you one more in that exact scenario. The game before they play Cleveland, they play at Houston, and you know, if the Wizards are potentially looking ahead to that Cleveland game, maybe that's, you know, maybe yeah, the record wise, it's a head to head matchup that's going to determine something or whatever. Maybe they look ahead, not they're going to look past the team with James Harden and Chris Paul. But I mean, James Harden's the kind of dude, obviously he can get to the free throw line, you know, 20 times a game, hits threes, all that kind of good stuff. So I would put James Harden on April 3rd, 2nd. I'll give him 39 for that game.
Yeah, I mean, look, that's the smart money is always on Harden when it comes to scoring.
All right, well, is the smart money on James Harden for league MVP? I asked you top five MVP in the league. I don't know if you already have yours, so I will give you mine just to make sure that you can have a second to think about it. I'll go in reverse order here. Number five.
American Idol.
Right, so American Idol style. Number five, I'll go Kevin Durant. You know, it's just hard, I think, for the Warriors for any of them to crack right now the top couple because they're so, you know, they're all good. The four guys are all studs. I'll put Durant. He's the only one I would have of them in the top five. But I'll put Kip Durant. He's, you know, he's probably the second best player in the world right now behind LeBron, or, you know, some might say he's the best. But I'll go Durant at five. Number four, give me it's not going to be – I think Russell falls out of the top five. He's not going to get average a triple-double again, and therefore – it won't be like a bad year by any stretch, but it'll be a little bit different. So I'm going to go James Harden at four. I don't know how the hell this thing with Chris Paul is going to work, and his numbers will probably drop too. But, you know, I don't know. This Kevin McHale, he's not a leader thing. I think that's going to maybe inspire Harden a little bit. So I'll go Harden four. Number three, give me Kawhi Leonard. You know, he's like all the Spurs have. Sorry, LaMarcus Aldridge. And when the Spurs surprise everybody and finish higher than, you know, right now everybody's sort of looking past them in the West. When they somehow, you know, get 55 or 50 or 60 wins, Kawhi will be the reason why. Number two, Adam, are you sitting down?
Yes, I actually am, yes.
Number two, I'm not kidding, Joel Embiid. because Joel Embiid is a freaking monster. People who vote for the MVP love him. His Twitter fight over the weekend with Hassan Whiteside was just too good. I mean, it was his comebacks, his put-downs, the trash talk, just too good. But the bigger thing is, of course, he's a monster player. The only issue has been the health, and that's obviously a massive if. If he can play 70 games, not only if he plays 70 games, I don't even know if it's, I think the Sixers make the playoffs. I think they'll probably even be a little bit, maybe even a little bit better than the 8 seed. And at that point, considering the Sixers have been such a disaster, the worst team in the league more or less for the last however many years, 5 years or so, that all those factors together will push Embiid up so high that I think he finishes second to LeBron James, who, while all these other people were paired off together, Harden and Chris Paul, Russell Westbrook gets Paul George and Melo, the Golden State thing. LeBron is more or less, he's not by himself, but you know what I mean. He doesn't have Kyrie anymore. It's viewed more of a, for the first time for him in a long time, it's sort of him and then other guys. I think Cleveland probably wins the East. I think LeBron, he'll do LeBron stuff, and I think LeBron will win the MVP.
Well, I actually had Embiid as a dark horse not to be that high in the MVP, but I do think wins are a big factor and obviously improvement win totals. And if he stays healthy, yes, I would put him as a top, I'd say top five player. I mean, I have to try to think who would actually be better than him, but yes, he is incredible. And however, I don't believe his feet are going to hold up, but I think it's between, this is not a hot take, but I think it's going between LeBron and Kawhi, and I think LeBron's going to have a bit of a revenge year. You see how he is with his passive aggressiveness on Twitter and Instagram, and I think the whole issue with Kyrie and wanting to maybe take the one seed when ordinarily he might have no problem just sitting out some games or taking some games off, I think he's going to take it personally if the Celtics are in first place throughout much of the regular season and everybody's talking about Kyrie turning the Celtics around. I think that LeBron will try to respond to that on the court. But I do think Kawhi, if the San Antonio can do what they always do and get the number two spot in the West, I think it's sort of his time. And if the quad injury is not that bad, if he's okay and able to play the whole season, I think that he being the number one guy on that team and the other teams like Harden with Chris Paul and like Russell Westbrook, splitting votes, with the own guys on their team. But the one dark horse I'll throw in here is Giannis.
I'm an idiot.
Simply because
I would put Giannis ahead of Harden. I put Giannis fourth. I forgot Giannis. Yeah, I like Giannis.
Yeah, well, yeah, good call. The only thing is, though, I don't know how many more games they're going to win. So it's sort of like they'll be improved, but they still have the injuries. But I think Giannis has that extra step, in there that he's going to keep improving. So I definitely put Giannis sort of maybe jumping over those other guys who are splitting the votes on their team and get him in there. But that would be my guys at the top.
Yeah, I mean, I think if the Bucks somehow finish the top four seed, then I think Giannis would probably finish top five. You're right. Otherwise, it's hard to say that they're going to get improve much more record-wise or seed-wise, but he just feels like such an evolutionary player, and as the Wizards saw in particular last year, he's just so ridiculously good.
Yeah. But he's good. I mean, obviously he's an incredible talent, but there is even so much more he can do with his mid-range game. It's just still not there, his scoring in isolation, and so that's something which, I mean, there's so much more room for improvement. And if he takes that step this year, that's going to be scary.
Yeah. With Dan Feldman, we talked about who's the second best player in the East. And obviously John Wall, Giannis, I'll let, everybody go listen to that if you want. But that was sort of the debate between those two guys behind LeBron. And, there's good arguments on both ends for that one. All right, Adam, last question, probably the most important one. Ultimately, I'm not going to ask where do you think the Wizards will get. I mean, so much is going to depend on the seed, as we saw a year ago. If you're playing Cleveland, if it ends up somehow they play Cleveland in the semifinal round versus, like last year where they avoided Cleveland, but if they had flipped it and they were in Toronto's spot, that maybe they really would have had no chance to get to the Eastern Conference Finals, but who knows. But, and plus there's also kind of health and all that. But number of games, number of wins. Will the Wizards finally crack the 50 plateau? margin. I'm not even going to put the over-under below that. We're going to make it right there. 50.5. 50.5, Adam. Over-under. Do the Wizards win over-under 50.5 games?
I'm going to have to stay true to my truth about it prediction, which was 51. And I think they will, mainly because I think the bench will improve enough that some of those games they lost during the season, they'll get back. And you also have to remember they had a really bad start to the season last year. So, you know, if they can get off to a decent start, just that alone puts them in a much better position.
Did you guys, as a group, do predictions?
We about five or six of us all gave our predictions. So I didn't average it out, but most of us, except for one, I think had them over the 50 plateau. But again, our track record is not that great collectively. So, you know,
why I asked, because I think last year you guys had let me play in your Randier games, and I think I had the over-under. I think I picked 48 wins.
Oh, well, last year.
Oh, that's cool. No, I see.
I thought about sending you a text, but then I figured that's just more work for you. But next time.
Mm-hmm.
Take it up with Kyle. That's what I recommend. Take it up with our editor-in-chief.
All right. Well, fair enough. All right. Well, good stuff. I mean, we touched on a lot of things, but I mean, I know we didn't get to everything. Is there something you were able to get to your points about the bench being a concern? Anything else wizardy related that you feel we need to get to before the season starts? This is potentially your last chance, at least on this podcast, to vent your spleen, as somebody would say. You got anything less thoughts, one good or bad? One way or the other?
No, I mean, I think we're sort of in the calm before the storm, and I think I'm
what
looking forward to that opening night game. Well, I'm not being pulling a Trump here. I'm saying,
well,
you know,
I was.
This is we have a few days off where there's sort of not much activity that's going to happen, and it's really up until Wednesday night when we see hopefully Embiid. I'm hoping to see Embiid Wednesday night. That's really when everything gets thrown out the window. All the predictions get thrown out the window, and let's see if they can put it together. All the talk they had since losing that game 7, let's see if they can put it together on the court.
We will see. All right, Mr. Rubin, appreciate it as always. Again, go follow Adam on Twitter at Liddell's Place. You know, Liddell Echols bio, you guys are going to ask him about. Get your Satoransky thoughts. Love into Adam as well. He's big in the Czech Republic. He can pass messages along as needed. And look, he's a big help here to this podcast, and I legitimately am happy that he's willing to participate in my nonsense. I should also mention Adam is also going to participate. Speaking of nonsense, I should have mentioned this earlier, but whatever.
Yeah.
But Adam's going to participate in our fantasy basketball league. I believe our spots are open. Our spots are filled. I really appreciate everybody who chimed in. I'll mention this at the top because I'm going to do the intro later. But anyway, we should have a fun season. Assuming everybody joins up, Adam's in the league. His buddy Rashad Mobley from Truth About It also. Scott Jackson from ESPN 980 and a bunch of others as well. So it should be a fun time. I'm not going to be the guy who burdens you guys on this podcast with, hey, here's what happened this week in the fantasy league. Nobody cares. But I'm sure we'll talk about it at some points throughout the year. All right. Adam, appreciate it. Thanks to you guys for listening. And until next time, see ya.
Everybody just stuff me. Neal gets open for three. Dagger!
Bobby's trying. Caught.
Long drive. Long bounce shot.
Dagger!
Not ball.